The giving season is nearing, and with that, Portage Health Foundation is proud to announce we have opened up applications for nonprofits interested in being part of Giving Tuesday. During the last 5 years, we have raised nearly $2 million for nonprofit organizations in Baraga, Houghton, Keweenaw, and Onondaga counties. This year, we're hoping to have our best year yet. For eligibility requirements and a link to apply, visit phfgive.org/givingtuesday. The deadline is Sunday, October 2nd at 11:59 p.m. Nonprofits can apply now at phfgive.org/givingtuesday.
Welcome to another edition of Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program is brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation. You can find them, of course, at phfgive.org. We are running up on the November election, and so we are going to start our coverage today of candidates who are going to be on the ballot in the election. We're going to start with the 38th State Senate District and talk with the incumbent. First of all, the Republican, Ed McBroom. Welcome back to the program, Ed.
Hey, Todd, it's really nice to be back with you. Thanks for the time.
So you're running for re-election. This, of course, would be your final term unless, as I'm reading it correctly, we pass the term limits legislation. Would that give you another term after this, potentially?
Nope. It very specifically does not apply to me. So
okay.
It does not change anything for me. This is my last go around if I win in November.
Does that change your outlook on how you do the job at this point? One of the comments that I have heard over the years about the term limit situation is that basically you set up a lot of situations where you've got a lot of legislators who are no longer beholden to voters and can perhaps be either free to do what their conscience says or, conversely, free to do what might get them their next job.
Yeah, I believe that that's sometimes true for some of my colleagues that I've worked with. Sometimes it's the only explanation for what they're doing. I've always promised since I first ran in 2010, and I think I've stayed true to it, to the fact that I make my decisions without a lot of regard to whether or not I can get reelected afterwards or, you know, how it affects my opportunities afterwards. I try to just be the same person and vote the same way regardless. And so I don't think it changes much for me to be in my last term. I'll still be working on the same issues and, you know, still filtering information and making decisions the same way I always do.
I know when we talked going into the primary election that one of the priorities you said you wanted to carry into this next term was some ethics legislation, clarity legislation, trying to make this all a little bit more clear and a little bit more ethical. What are your plans there?
Yeah, I continue to be a champion for government transparency and ethics requirements, having an ethics review committee, oversight, strengthening the oversight of the bureaucracy and the government. All of these things have been policies that I think I supported a lot in concept when I first got elected, and then it's taken time to figure out, okay, here's how we do it. Here's the change that needs to be made or the law that needs to be created or potentially removed in order to make those things happen. And so it takes time. I mean, it takes time to learn how to do any job, right? Whether you're running a radio station or a piece of equipment or teaching school, there's always a learning curve. And I feel like, you know, even the last term or so, I've really been able to understand where these things are going, but it takes time to litigate that once you learn it. So hopefully here in my last 4 years, all of the groundwork I've laid out, all of the effort I've done to figure out how and where and when this should get done, hopefully now the effort to get it done pays off. And so it's my last chance to try and do that. And not just on those issues, but many other issues, whether they're forestry or hunting issues, mining issues, a lot of things. And so you see a lot of legislators like myself and others who set up long-term projects. And you didn't think it needed to be a long-term project. You didn't want it to be a long project. And yet it just ends up that way because of how the system works. And term limits are constantly tossing out your allies and the people that were helping. And then you have to get new allies and train new people, and then all of a sudden I'm gone. So it's really a rapid turnover with the term limits, and it makes it very difficult to get good things done. It can make certain bad things getting done hard too, but unfortunately it often takes a lot less thoughtfulness to get bad things done.
One of the, I think, most dangerous myths that I think at least has popped up over the past couple of decades is that governance is easy. There are people who are saying, if I just go to Lansing, I can fix all of this because I'm just going to bring in some common sense, or I'm going to bring in and I'm just going to do things and get it all taken care of. Governance, from my observation over the last nearly half century of doing this, governance is not easy at all.
Right. No, I think it's an interesting dynamic. And clearly we can all think of people who are in office, maybe even some of your listeners think about it, about me, and that's fine. But we can all think of people that, boy, I wish term limits would kick in and get rid of that person. I wish they had term limits to get rid of Nancy Pelosi or Mitch McConnell. But then you get, and I especially hear this on my side of the aisle a lot of times, where people are saying, we just should elect all new people, get rid of all of those people, and maybe we should only have term limits of one term. They should just serve one term, because once they're there, you can't have them anymore. And I'm thinking to myself, it's like, you really don't understand that, like any other job out there, it does take time to get understand, to learn where the bathroom is.
Yeah.
to learn who to call, who not to call, what works, what doesn't work, and people get better at the jobs. And I watch countless legislators mature, become good at the job. I don't always agree with them, but they become good at serving their constituents and good at discussing policy, good at writing legislation. And in Michigan, we have the shortest term limits in the country. And it's like, hey, you're just starting to get good at the job. Get out now. And, new people coming in who've only served for 2 weeks can be just as corrupted or more corrupted than somebody who's been serving for 10 years, in my experience. And so I just, it's a shame to see so many people, and especially, at least from my perspective, from my side of the aisle, saying what we really need in government is, and especially in our legislative branch, to take on the lifelong bureaucrats and the other problems we have, is people who have zero experience with how government actually works. Now, I'm not saying that we don't all come to it with varied levels of skills and at least the common sense to say, hey, that's not working the way it is. I mean, I'm dealing with stuff like that every day, whether it's the UIA department firing their entire fraud department during COVID, or the Secretary of State's office frustrating me on trying to help people get their suspended license back after 30 years since their DUI. I mean, yeah, there's a ton of stuff that's not common sense, but it takes more than just being angry to get a change done. It takes more than just recognizing that the law is dumb to be able to figure out how to change that dumb law. And experience and practice makes a big difference in how effective a legislator can be.
And does it hand over more power to what I sometimes hear termed the deep state? Basically, if you have inexperienced oversight, the bureaucracy runs amok.
Yeah, it's so true that the bureaucracy is, it has a lot of longevity. And I've literally had bureaucrats in different departments, DNR, others, who will just specifically say, right to my face, I will be here longer than you, and you're stalling our agenda right now, but when you're gone, who's going to keep fighting this? And, Tom Casperson and I were a little bit fortunate that we were such similar-mindedness on some of these issues that I've been able to carry on Tom's legacy, and we have outlasted a few of the bureaucrats, and we were making some changes, and then we got this governor, and now she's kind of resisting the good changes that we were pushing on the departments. But now I'm there resisting the things she wants to put back, and change things back. And this is always push and pull, right? I mean, she has her obligations and duties, and she got elected too. So it's an interesting system. I love our, you know, Constitution's way of setting up the government, and the closer we can follow that document, the better we are. And so we're always fighting to make sure we're sticking as close to it as possible. I believe the power truly resides within the legislative branch. And when you read the Constitution, that's what it says. Unfortunately, the legislatures of the past gave a lot of authority to the executives and ceded over. You know, it's like, well, you guys take care of that. You write all these rules. And if we don't have oversight to go back and say, that's not what we meant, then we need to put laws in place that say, hey, you write the rules, but only for this period of time. And then no more rule writing unless you come to us. And so those are some of the nuanced changes I've been trying to make, because I can't get rid of the mindset from any of my colleagues that don't want to get into the nitty gritty and actually write the rules in the statute. They just want to say, let the department promulgate the rules. I haven't been able to stop that. But what I am working to do is to say, but at least let's mandate that we have to review the rules they write, and that they can't just write rules on a 50-year-old law without anybody checking on it, because things change over 50 years. This was the problem with commercial fishing, right? We haven't changed the commercial fishing statute since 1969. The department writes rules for over 50 years, and to the point where, and the law literally says, here's the law, but the department can write any rules it wants, even if they contradict the law. And you're like, why did the legislature even write a law at this point?
Yeah.
So, you know, I come along and I'm like, in the future, and I'm trying to amend this law to say this, here's what the law is. And sure, the department needs some ability to write some very specific rules like net sizes and things like that that might change. But after so many years, they need to come back to the legislature and say, hey, the law's no longer functional. We need a change right now, because we need to kind of pull that authority on rulemaking back at certain points.
Talking with Ed McBroom, incumbent Republican in the 38th State Senate District, running for re-election as we begin our election coverage. And we'll be doing this for the next few weeks on Copper Country Today. Let's hit some of the hot button issues here that I suspect many of us know your positions on, but I do want to touch on them.
Sure.
The big issue statewide, there was a poll that came out as we record this on Thursday, a poll that came out this morning that said the driving factor in a lot of this election is going to be in Michigan, abortion. You are obviously you're pro-life. How far does that extend? The exceptions that are talked about sometimes for rape, incest, and other types of forced sex. Do you support those exceptions or not?
No. And it's because you really can't be consistently pro-life if you say that the reasons I'm pro-life are because I believe it's a human life. It's a baby. It has its own DNA. It has its own body. And therefore, it can't just be, you know, ended arbitrarily, as no other life we allow to just simply be ended by somebody else who says, I don't want this life to continue. We don't allow that to happen any other time. And so it's impossible for me to come to a scientific or a logical conclusion that says that, well, but there's instances where this is too difficult emotionally or too impractical, you know, and folks who are like, well, you know, if you don't have abortion, you're going to have a lot of kids born into poverty. And it's like, but we don't murder people just because of financial convenience. So, you know, clearly we need an exception when it comes to the life of the mother, where there's two lives at stake here, and one can and one can't survive. I believe that that's a much different situation that's worthy of the exception, but I cannot rectify the other situations in that way. And, you know, we need to recognize, though, that, and I've told this to many pro-life crowds for years before this all kind of started up here with the change in Roe v. Wade, is that this doesn't call for us to be unkind or to spike the ball and walk away and say, we won this race. These are real lives that are impacted by this change. These are people in crisis, people who can't necessarily afford to have a baby and didn't plan to have one. And what are we going to do to support them? And that's where I think we should be really spending so much time right now, is how are we going to support this community of people who suddenly are faced with an unwanted pregnancy, and a child that isn't, you know, isn't theirs in a sense because of the circumstances of conception. And how can we help them? How can we come alongside of them and support them through it and after it and support that life afterwards? And I wish we would spend a lot more time arguing about that than whether or not it should just be terminated.
Real quickly, does that not fly a bit in the face of the general position of the Republican Party, which tends to lean away from providing social, governmental-type support to individuals?
Well, I think that that characterization of, you know, the Republican Party is a bit of a red herring and is certainly, you know, always tossed out there. Republicans don't care about everybody. And it's like, no, Republicans supporting those who need help and having a safety net. It's just that we don't like to do blank checks for people that last forever and create generational poverty in circumstance where, you know, somebody can't work. And if you just go back a little while ago, I mean, Bill Clinton was adopting the Tommy Thompson plan from Wisconsin back in the 90s, welfare to work, because everybody recognized that you can't just give free money away indefinitely to people for not working. And, you know, so many of those things that Bill Clinton did in the 90s, Barack Obama directly overturned with executive orders. And look where it's gotten us now, where people don't want to go back to work. It's and what is that doing to all of our community? The whole economy is based on people working, and we can't get people to go to work right now. So I don't take that criticism of the Republican Party very seriously. That's just a typical ploy that's thrown out, especially during election time.
All right, State Senator Ed McBroom, if folks want to know more about your positions, how do they find out?
Well, you certainly give me a call anytime. I mean, people are calling me all the time, or they can go to my website and email me or contact me through Facebook Messenger and other things. And I try to keep up with communicating. I'm also, you know, all over the UP during campaign season, sometimes at parades, and people run up and say, hey, I need to talk to you. And I'm like, well, obviously we can't have a whole policy discussion right here on the street. So let's, you know, give me your phone number and let's get together and chat about it. So, you know, between that and coming to other meetings around the area, I'm just, you know, I'm out and about or you know, people look me up all the time. And so that's the easiest way, is to just do it one-on-one all the time.
All right. Thank you, Senator Ed McBroom, and best wishes to you.
Hey, thanks so much, Todd. Have a great day.
Ed McBroom's opponent, the Democratic opponent in the 38th District, is John Brahms, and he joins me on Copper Country Today now. John, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me today.
Thank you for joining me. Senator McBroom, of course, has been on the scene for quite a while, fairly known quantity. You, on the other hand, we don't know a whole lot about, so give me a little bit of a biography. Who are you? What do you do?
Well, I'm grown up in Marquette. My family's been in the Upper Peninsula for five generations. I was born in 1966 and graduated from Marquette Senior High School in 1984. My parents actually went to Lawrence, where I was born, and then I also have a lot of family in Elder County, and I have family really all over UP. My father graduated from Escanaba. I joined the Army in 1987 and spent 25 years in the military, and came back home in 2012 with my wife and two kids. And I've been working the last 7 years at the Marquette Area Public Schools. I'm a special education aide, where I work with special needs children. And I've been involved with political activities in the local Democratic Party for about the last 10 years. And I did run for the local Marquette Board of Light and Power 5. I'm currently a precinct delegate. And I decided that no other candidates had chose to run for this position. And I want to be a person that could represent the Democratic Party and the people that want to have a progressive voice to choose for their representation. I thought I'd still stand up and be that voice.
Yeah, this has been typically a pretty Republican district over the last few years, at least. A bit of an uphill battle for you, perhaps?
Well, I think in general that all incumbent typically have an advantage over opponents, is because of incumbency does lend itself to having more contacts and name recognition. you know, this seat used to be traditionally Democratic with people like Joe Mack and up through Mike Prusy. And it wasn't until 2010 that it's become more Republican. But, you know, every election, the people have a choice and should be able to choose from among the candidates running. So regardless of what happens, I figure that the best thing to do is give the people a choice. And I like to promote the progressive choice for the Democratic Party and let the people decide.
So let's talk about a few of the things that you might wish to accomplish if you are sent down to Lansing as far as a member of the state Senate. You are a Democrat. I'm assuming that, and let's start right with the elephant in the room here, I'm assuming that you would be pro-choice.
Oh, definitely. I believe that making a choice for something as personal as health care, regardless of whether it's abortion or any other type of health care needs, should be between a man, a woman, and a doctor, a man and a doctor, if it's a male issue or any issues, really. And I did support and sign the Proposal 2 Amendment and the Proposal 3 Amendment. I am pro-choice.
All right. And, excuse me, I'll fix that too. This is going so well. Thank you for bearing with me on all of this.
I'm glad it's at least if it's recorded, we can fix the minor issues.
Yep, we can take care of the minor issues, certainly. You look back over the last 4 years of the Gretchen Whitmer administration. Have you been generally supportive of all of the things that she has done, including some of the COVID-19 restrictions, which caused some controversy?
I've support the governor. I was supported in 2018. And, you know, there's some really difficult decision. And part of being a leader is making the hard choices when there's hard decisions to make. And if we had better leadership from the federal government at the time, which I don't think was apparent from the last president, there would have been better coordinating between federal and state to make sure there was a smoother transition with like support for PP funds and other funding to make sure we got through the pandemic. So given the hard choices and the fact that she was trying to protect the health and welfare of the general population, I do support Gretchen Whitmer and the entire Democratic ticket.
The Republican Party has lurched to the right. There have been a number of controversial positions that have been taken. One of them, perhaps most recently, is an attack on libraries, an attack on school libraries, an attack on certain books that people on the right side think are inappropriate. We had the Republican candidate for governor, Tudor Dixon, just recently called for banning pornography in school libraries. Have you noticed, you work in a school, have you noticed any pornography in the library, and is that a problem?
I think most of what some of the things coming from the head of the Republican Party and nationally and locally and at the state level are a lot of conspiracies that don't really exist. I don't see it. I've never seen any type of thing like pornography in the school. I think it's something that's an imagined event that's used to try to create controversy. There is no controversy. You know, I hear the same thing about CRT, which I don't believe exists either, or the a lot of the things I hear, whether it's election lies or other activities that I hear from the people like the person running for governor or secretary of state or attorney general. I think it's just a lot of smoke and they say smoke and mirrors, but I don't think there's really anything to it. I think it's just trying to get attention in order to gather more votes and gather more money for their campaigns.
You work in a school and you work in a particularly critical area. You mentioned that you worked with special needs students.
Right.
Is that a priority that you would take with you to Lansing?
Well, I think education in general is a high priority. I would support funding greater funds for public education. I don't support any type of school voucher system. I think all public funds need spent only on public schools. And that also leads to my support for an increase in the minimum wage. There's a lot of people in the education area, specifically along with other areas where people are not paid adequately for the work they do, which is causing a crisis in the number of lack of employees, schools really nationwide. And I see it. You see it here in Michigan. I mean, there's a lot of entry-level aid positions here at Marquette. They're only paid $11.50 an hour, which is about $3 or $4 less than somebody can make at a fast food restaurant or a place like Walmart. So it's really not a good idea to underpay people and expect quality people to stay on and work. So I just want to also believe in that get more people back to work, that public schools should allow 3- and 4-year-old preschoolers to attend school. I wouldn't make it mandatory, but I would allow it as an option. And I think that would help with the child care crisis also.
If the 3- and 4-year-olds were allowed to, quote unquote, attend school, would they then receive the stipend from the state similar to what the K through 12 students receive?
I believe that would be, I would support that. I think that would increase school funding as a way to, would be, probably had to build more building space and hire more people and pay people a higher wage. But in reflecting that, it would also allow a lot more people ability to go to work and build the economy by having the option of having affordable care. And I believe that the kids would have be better prepared for their future school needs if they were socially better prepared when they had a younger age. So, I mean, there is a 3- and 4-year-old program now for special needs kids that are called Early Childhood Special Education, but I think that could be expanded to all children in that age group.
Talking with John Brahms, he is the Democratic candidate for the 38th state Senate seat, running against Ed McBroom in the upcoming election. Let's take, because I have an interest particularly in the field that you work in. Do you ever look past high school, past graduation, past the educational system? And are we doing a good enough job to help these people once they go out into the new world and leave the educational system?
Well, I think that colleges should encourage people to attain whichever type of post-secondary education is appropriate. I mean, some people may choose vocational education or others may. I mean, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all for whether it's going on to a traditional 2-year or 4-year, but, you know, there's been some advancement made in providing support for student loans or forgiveness or so forth with the federal government. And I would support a program where when people go into especially an area that's critically needed, nursing, for example, or education or other places that there is a student debt forgiveness program that allows them to fill those needed positions by paying back when they do get a job that they have the training for. So, I think there, if that's what someone wants to do and they want to go to school to post-secondary, that they can, but if they choose a different route, well, that's okay too.
But in particular, those special needs students, once they become special needs adults, many of them really not employable or can find only minimal employment. Are we as a society doing enough to make sure that their lives are comfortable and productive and rewarding?
Well, I think so. I mean, I see them. I work with the younger generation up until at the elementary school, but I have seen, you know, at the high school level, they actually go through age 26. And there are some programs through, like, the regional educational support agencies where they work towards employability in places like nonprofits such as Goodwill or some other places like that. So I know there are programs in place that have done, and I'm not sure without seeing exactly how it goes beyond once they get in their 30s and 40s. I haven't really been able to observe beyond like the mid-20s. I know they have some group home environments and other activities and programs. But I'd have to see more about it because I just don't have the ability to observe as much as I'd like to.
Fair enough. Lansing has been, matter of fact, politics all over the place, has been very divisive in recent years. There's a lot of public name calling, a lot of just not being very niceness going on. if you are elected and sent to Lansing, is that something that you can deal with? Is it something that you can rise above?
Well, you know, I used to live in Washington, D.C. for 4 years when I was at the Pentagon. And compared to Washington, I think Lansing would be at least less intense. It's more local, but still, there seems to be a lot of constant fighting back and forth after Election Day. I look at the campaign season as when you're trying to gain the most seats for your side of the aisle. But after the election's over and you take your seats, I believe it's incumbent upon people to find common ground. You know, that's what you're paid for. That's the job you're expected to do. So, like I said, between now and Election Day, it's all about getting as many seats for your side as possible. But once the votes are counted and the people take their seats, then I would do as much as I can to find, you know, common ground that promotes the needs and the values of, well, the Upper Peninsula, which is, well, you got to remember, we only have a very small number of people of seats up here, and it would take a lot of cooperation with other people from around the state. So I would do my best to try to get over that. I mean, I was a diplomat in the military my last 7 years, so I used to travel overseas for 14 years interacting with people from around the world. I think I can do it at the state level.
All right. There is also a history in the Upper Peninsula of us being, shall we say, a little independent, and good representatives and senators that I have seen over the years have had the ability to work independently to go against their party from time to time. Do you think that you could vote in favor of something that you think would be best for our area if your party officials were to oppose that?
Well, I would have put the needs of the district first, but it would have to be a specific information. I'd hard to case by case whether it's what the information is, but I wouldn't vote just blindly party line just because the Democratic Party had the popular issue. I mean, you know, mining has been an important aspect of the UP. It might not be politically popular with everybody, but I would support safe, environmentally responsible mining that we've been doing here for a long time. Renewable forest products. If you're going to harvest lumber and so forth, that's been going on for well over a century. If it can be done with replanting, and you know, some people might not think we should cut any trees, but you know, as long as you can do it in a sustainable manner and in a responsible manner, and if it's, for example, those might be some things that some people in the Democratic Party might not support, but I still would.
All right,
so,
John.
Yeah, I would put the UP first.
Got to wrap this up here, but I do want to give you just a second or two. If people want to know more about you, learn more about you, do you have an online presence? How can they find out?
Well, I have a website. It's www.johnbrahmse, that's johnbrahmse.com. And, of course, we have a Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter accounts. So if you type in John Brahms for State Senator, Brahms for Michigan, that information is readily available online. We'll be up in Houghton on the 1st of October for the meeting at the Houghton County Democratic Party headquarters in Dollar Bay. They're going to have a headquarters there for now until Election Day. So I hope to meet some people again up there in person, probably at 10 a.m. Saturday morning on the 1st. And we've been traveling around the entire UP, and we'll probably travel some more and knock some more doors and get out the word as much as possible between now and November 8th.
All right, John Brahms, candidate for the 38th State Senate seat, running as a Democrat against Republican Ed McBroom. Thank you for your time, and Copper Country Today will continue in a moment.